Welcome to Whistleblowers, episode 14.
We don't know who's got him. We don't know what's happening to him. We know nothing about it.
The abduction of William Tyrrell. Twists and turns. The investigations beginning into a pedophile ring. The sightings, the documents, and the $1 million reward.
That William disappeared while he was in the parental responsibility of the minister and in the care of departmentally approved carers is a matter of legitimate public interest.
The biological parents, the foster parents, and the bushland on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. What really happened to William Tyrrell is still on the minds of the people of New South Wales, much the same way as Azaria Chamberlain was on the minds of Australians all those years ago. Nobody has been found in the William Tyrrell case. However, whistleblowers will bring you information from around the periphery of this case. There's been some developments this week. We're going to go into them during this episode. And we have with us, as usual, our crime investigator, our investigative journalist, and our all-round crime buff. We're very lucky to have her. She's always on the case, researching into the wee small hours and revealing information that is often not of interest to anybody. But very regularly, there'll be a small piece of information when passed on to the authorities becomes part of a link to the bigger picture and the solving of some of New South Wales' most famous crime cases. So in the William Tyrrell case, Jennifer Stone has been researching and keeping track and even attending court hearings for this case. But the authorities have failed to turn up any trace of Tyrrell or clues about his disappearance. Police have yet to conclude what actually happened to him. The Chief Inspector, Gary Jubelin, who is now retired or no longer in the police force, said the investigators would treat the case as though he was alive until they had evidence proving otherwise. So he has been removed. And the homicide goes on. And there are people in the community like Jennifer who have not given up hope in finding Tyrrell alive or dead. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to Whistleblowers. And this podcast is all about your research. And, you know, we've been hearing little bits in the media and we get an endless flow of inquiries from our loyal podcast listeners about the William Tyrrell case. You've got a little bit of information for us this morning. Before we talk about Gary Jubelin, you mentioned the biological parents. Has there been anything happening in the William Tyrrell case recently, and what can you tell us about that information about the biological parents?
Well, we're coming up for the last part of the coroner's inquest. So the Crown Prosecutor Craddock, he's representing the Crown. He's putting his story together. It's just a story. Remember, he hasn't exposed anything. And they haven't acknowledged my research within this case at all. It's interesting that my research has gone to Detective Laylord since July 2015. So he's been receiving my emails for a while.
Detective Laylaw is now the new chief investigator
on the William Tyrrell case. Okay. But he also links to cold cases, and that's probably why I was emailing him to begin with. I remember I was linking into Juanita Nelson. But I've also been the person who created the link that brought Malcolm Naden on stuff. So I had a link to a phone number that Malcolm Naden was ringing in King's Cross for help. I got that link 26th of January 2012. I sent it to the police. I said to them, I knew that phone number was real because I checked it, that it rang to the right person. It was ringing to a person in his Aboriginal background known as Uncle Tony within the Nomads. And he also links into out at Dubbo into a few cases that way too. So this Uncle Tony. So I gave the information and I told the police that Malcolm Naden was in Gloucester area. But they were looking at Tamworth because he had shot police. And that was why the police were ramping up. He was now more dangerous than more animal behaviour. And within my research getting there, within 24 hours they had changed the pattern. And they did catch him in March, but it took a while. I only had an area, but I knew they were looking in the wrong area. So it's interesting that I've been telling them about that and they got an arrest when I've been telling them about William Terrell and telling them they're looking in the wrong area.
Well, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes, you have to admit, for the not only the New South Wales Police Force and the investigators, and we'll go into that shortly with Gary Jubelin and the information this week. So no doubt, quite possibly, I could be wrong, they could be all over the place. So they may come back to your emails and your information at some point, so keep sending that type of information in. But okay, so this detective, Laylor, is in charge, and you know, you mentioned something about the victim statement from the biological parents not going ahead.
Yes, well,
what's happening there?
Okay, so on the 6th to the 10th, there should be still there's some witnesses to come forward. Tony Jones has not taken the stand.
And who was Tony Jones again?
He's a pedophile.
From that area?
From that area, but he also came to Woolloomooloo.
Right.
So he was someone that came into my investigation in a couple of times.
And will he appear at the inquest? Or?
Well, they reckon he will, but I'm not sure. He did have another charge with, you know, trying to assault people and things like that.
So and they rounded up a number of young guys up there recently in that area where William went missing from, and Tony Jones was not one of those. He's still...
No. But those Kendall men that face, I allege, are involved in the William Terrell case. Now, they've been hit now with 250 more charges on what they've already received back in April, I think it was, that or May. So there is an investigation happening.
Yes.
And they will link in.
And they will link in. And, you know, that's information's in the hands of the police and ongoing. But what we do know is one of the, was it the younger guy that we saw on the media reports with the red hair, you mentioned?
Yes, the red hair. And if you go through the foster mother's report, she talks about a guy driving a blue car that had red hair. And the red-headed man that was arrested, in his front yard, had a blue car. So, which was similar to what Ron Chapman had seen. And then the four-wheel drive was in the neighbouring property. And as I allege, the B&B that they used to take William to, where Tony Jones eventually went to too, I believe, and the boat access to get him out of there was all across the road. It was all very quite close.
It's interesting, you know, and different crime writers have had different angles on this, and the police are no doubt investigating everything. Let's hope they come eventually to what Jennifer sent in and still sending in. But stunning claims about William Tyrrell's abduction have emerged in a new book by local North Coast writer and investigator Ali Chumley. She's a North Coast school teacher who lived next door to one person of interest in the case and had access to confidential police files, has concluded up to three people abducted William Tyrrell. That book would be interesting to read, and maybe if Ali's out there, we might be able to organise to hear her talk about her book, but a lot of this information you've been talking about for a while. Now, back to the biological parents.
So the victim statement, what I got told, Alana Smith was asked to help them do a victim statement. And she went through all the evidence I had collected. So she said, hey, mate, we're going to go through this. I'm going to get my head around it. I'm going to do some research. Now, this was not told to the police at all. And we went through. Three people in the car. The person in the blue car with the red hair, who could it be? How come they could get to different cars? Because remember, Tony Jones's car was found burnt out, and I believe that was one of the cars that was sitting opposite that the foster mother saw in the morning. So how did they get enough time to grab a boy, put him in the car, go down the road, swap cars, and then the two cars that got William Terrell go round the corner, you know, on three wheels, as Ron Chapman kind of was saying. And it's not far to the B&B. It's just not far, 5 minutes, if that.
And Ron Chapman was the gentleman who saw the car speeding past and noticed.
And the police took no notice of it.
Originally they didn't, that's right. We were all shocked when, you know, years later we heard about this and we went, why the heck hadn't they, you know, challenged that? But he said also, Ron Chapman, that the child that he saw had a red or blue type clothing, like a Spider-Man's outfit.
That's right, that's right. But the biological parents were here in Sydney. And why don't they want to do a victim statement? So Alana Smith has asked, and she has just reported this week that they haven't gotten back to her to help her do the victim statement. So it's interesting that, because why wouldn't they want to do a victim statement? You know, that brings up more questions. You know, and I know the biological father is not seeing the biological daughter. That's with the foster family at the moment. He fears for her life. If he goes there, he fears that they'll go after her, the same as William. So it's interesting that he's got that fear there. You know.
It is very interesting, and it's also interesting that, you know, the laws of New South Wales allow the biological parents to know where their child is going. And in this case, the mother, the biological mother, was able to contact the Salvation Army.
Yeah, Salvation Army, Ben Atwood, would have updated Carly Terrell on where her son was going to go. So he was supposed to go away on the Friday up to Kendall, but he eventually went Thursday night. So I don't know whether that update was needed to be told to the biological mother.
Okay.
But it's interesting they came in the morning on the Friday and that they were already there.
Very interesting. So we brought you that brief update on the Terrell situation because people have been asking for that. We'll keep you posted because we're... Oh, Jennifer?
We've got to go over the Gary Jubelin.
We're going on to Gary Jubelin next. Jennifer's grabbing the microphone out of my hand with this one because we've received information during the week through the media. But we will come back to William Terrell because Jennifer's got a feeling from some of her contacts that, you know, the hard work that the police are doing behind the scenes is about to reap some rewards in the form of information. So stay tuned.
Yes, I call it the Q plan, but the Q plan has been on since 1963 and the assassination of JFK.
The Q plan is in the letter Q or the town Q, K-E-W?
No, the letter Q.
Go.
And it relates to where JFK's grave is from an aerial shot, looks like a Q. Q's also the book in the Bible that was missed as a gospel. I haven't read it, but it's been missed for a reason. But it's a letter. It's number 17. It relates to 17. So President John F. Kennedy was the 35th prime president of America and Donald Trump. Now, the guys in Kendall that were arrested link into being told from an American source. Now, my information I had been sending to Interpol and to the White House, because I thought the corruption in Australia and in New South Wales was not picking it up. And that's exactly the same as what Donald McKay was faced with. He found the corruption was something that caused his murder.
And was that information from America? Were we told who gave us that information? Was it the FBI or the...
ACCC.
Oh, in America. Okay, so there you go, Jennifer. Well done on that one. So let's go. We'll move on because what has emerged throughout this story, folks, is we've all become quite fond of the detective, Gary Jubelin. Maybe some, not everybody's fond of him, but those of us that listen to I Catch Killers, a more professional podcast than this one, but nonetheless, it's debatable. I think this one's more interesting. Gary Jubelin has lost his appeal.
Detective Gary Jubelin says he's disappointed at losing an appeal against his conviction for illegally recording conversations while he was the lead investigator of the 2014 disappearance of William Tyrrell. Mr. Jubelin was found guilty in April and fined $10,000 over four conversations he recorded on his phone with one-time person of interest, Paul Savage.
The court says that I went too hard to find out what happened to William Tyrrell. I couldn't live with myself if I did anything less, so I stand by what I did.
Mr. Jubelin is now consulting his lawyers about his next move.
Now, we all enjoy a straight shooter and someone who's up front and has nothing to hide, and Gary strikes me as that type of individual. So it is a bit of a shock. What are your thoughts on this current situation and Gary's lament?
Well, he was on holidays when he went and did that illegal recording. So I suppose that was part of it. He was up in Port Macquarie visiting his family. So then you start to think, oh, he was in Port Macquarie. This all happened in that area. And hang on a minute. So that research links you start to think about. If he was looking as an scapegoat for someone to blame the crime on, Paul Savage or Bill Spedding, allegedly, could fit the bill. And they've both been cleared by the coroner, so which is a good thing. Mm. So if this links into any corrupt police or now ex-police, as I believe one of them that links to Albury links in, and he's now an ex-police, and he was a crime manager down there. And he also links to the ICE network. So William's murder, or allegedly his murder, will link into the ICE network. Not the cocaine as such, but maybe as time went on, after they kidnapped him, the cocaine links might attend. So we have Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, she mentioned this.
Yeah, she had a boat that was her father's boat. Robert Maxwell's boat, and it was called Ghislaine. Now, that was in Sydney in 2014 when William Tyrrell went missing. Now, the boat that I thought William went out to sea on didn't come into Sydney. So many of the drug drops they exchange out at sea. So was he moved from one boat to another? That would be of interest. And that boat being of interest to do with Jeffrey Epstein links to alleged pedophile links would then make sense as to why the Americans are following this up. What other information have they got over there?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting stuff, if any of that is ever proven, because, you know, Jennifer goes way beyond the normal, you know, areas that police might investigate, and often comes up with little bits of information like that that link to other countries. And Jennifer's onto it. And anything else you want to add about Gary Jubelin before we move on?
Oh, well, Gary Jubelin reckons he'll spend time in prison rather than paying a $10,000 fine. I believe he will pay the fine. It would be interesting if he got sent to prison, but also, it'd be interesting for the police because they wouldn't want him being exposed to criminals he had locked up.
That's right.
So he'd be spending 24 hours in a cell or maybe in the old age care with Roger Rogerson as his friend. That would protect him.
Well, interesting you mentioned Roger. We'll end this episode today with just the reminder to all our listeners out there to keep your ears posted this week, because we've got the hearing starting up for the Rogerson appeal, and that will begin on Monday, I believe, Jennifer?
Yes, 21st of September. The Crown has put in a motion on appeals on Roger Rogerson, so for on his evidence. That will be to discount the submissions that he's done. It's probably protocol. It's probably nothing, because it hasn't been brought up. Glenn McNamara, they haven't done the same too, which is interesting. So it's been set down for 4 or 5 days this week.
And there we go, the push and shove of Roger Rogerson outside of his house there, being arrested. And I can't help but notice Jennifer with a big smile on his face. He's laughing as the reporters are pushing him and jostling. He's just been arrested for murder in this case. And the explosive claims have emerged this week before the hearing starts about why aspiring gangster Jamie Gow was really murdered inside the storage unit 803 and how he was lured there to his death. Okay, so the crooked cops, Roger Rogerson and Glenn McNamara, both serving life sentences. But, you know, some of the media outlets now are revealing that Gow may also have a story. And this is information that you brought to light 2 weeks ago in that last episode, and now the media is reporting it. We're going to come back to Jamie Gow and the connections.
I brought this to life in the book called The Notorious Scorpion.
Go on.
Because Roger Rogerson is that person. He was sitting in the room with Juanita Nelson dead in the corner of the Carousel Club. He's been a key person in the police force within many of these crimes until he resigned in 1986. Well, got asked to leave because there was too much pressure. He was being shown to be corrupt back then and working for the gangsters. Like, he'd be in a car with Lenny McPherson, and you'd think, how was that? But that was the day that they picked up Christopher Flannery.
Well, there we go, folks. So please don't forget that hearing starts this week. And just like the Bulldogs winning on Friday night, everybody said they couldn't do it. Maybe Roger has one more card to play. Now, Jennifer, how do you think it will play out?
Well, his barrister, George Thomas, has always said to me, when I find the gun, now I'm supposed to find that gun, so then the police search warrant will expose a gun. If that shows the gun has the fingerprints of Glenn McNamara, Rogerson will walk free.
Wow. All right. Well, stay tuned. This has been Greg Kerr, Jennifer Stone, Whistleblowers, Episode 13. Please like us on your Instagram account. And if you want to contact Jennifer, you can do so. People have been asking, how do we contact you guys? You go to Facebook and you look for the King's Cross Sting Facebook page, and you can contact Jennifer and send in any other information or questions that you might have. Thank you for joining us. Whistleblowers, Episode 14.